Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
It's that time on the radio where we have the pleasure to listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. How are you today, Bill?
Yep, hi Howard. I'm very well indeed, thank you. It's been a busy week, lots going on. I expect you've been busy too. Run up to Christmas now, of course.
Yes, Christmas on the horizon. Good news about the vaccine.
Excellent news. The idea that the UK, according to Matt Hancock, has jumped the gun and will be getting the vaccine within the UK much earlier than pretty much every other nation, despite the fact, of course, the vaccine is produced within the EU. Yeah, but great news that there are now three options of the vaccine to look forward to, and hopefully by the springtime, that vaccine will have impacted upon the consequences of the pandemic, and we may see a decline through first quarter, second quarter, and perhaps by the autumn of next year, we may all be released from the current incarcerations that have been continuously taking place.
Yeah. Well, Bill, Brexit has been in the news for obvious reasons, although it's taken a back seat during the COVID-19 pandemic to some extent. There's so much to digest, so I suspect we'll come back in a week's time, perhaps, and spend more time on it then. But have you got any particular comments just now?
Just that it's almost impossible to second-guess this now. You know, at one level you have Michel Barnier suggesting that the UK has conceded because it's prepared to accede to the European Court of Human Rights in disputes. And on the other hand, he then calls all the nations together to prepare them for a no-deal end to the negotiations. I mean, this is what's happened in the past week. Quite frankly, by the time this comes out, because things change minute by minute, it could be history. So difficult to forecast what's going to happen, but I still suspect that there will be a deal, and I suspect, personally, it's my personal opinion, and I suspect that there will be a continuation of negotiations by one form or another after the end of the transition period. It's almost unavoidable, in my view.
Okay, well, we will see next week, I guess. So let's turn to an important area that we haven't explored for a while. They say an Englishman's home is his castle. And that could also apply to the Scots, myself being half Welsh, and the Irish expatriates, of course. but there are implications for retired expatriates of retaining a larger property in these days.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, clearly when an individual decides to retire to continental Europe, generally speaking, value for money in terms of property size is much better within most of the areas favoured by British people choosing to live outside of the UK. And whilst at first sight that appears to be a very clear opportunity to upgrade the property you live in, of course, as time goes by and you increase in age and your property does the same thing, it very often is a situation in which people end up in, you know, being overhoused, if you like, to some extent, things change over time, and somewhat often because of that, undercapitalized in terms of income, and that is a common problem. It's very easy to buy into property within continental Europe. It just isn't as easy to sell out. People's expectation that it might be a similar process as the UK and the timescales might be similar is mistaken. It's a difficult proposition. The implications of owning that larger property, the larger the property, the more obviously the more expensive it is generally to run. Indeed, it's also true that apart from the costs of taxes, you've got your gardening, your housekeeper costs and other things that, generally speaking, come with these large properties. And those expenses, you know, can add up to a relatively high ongoing burden, in particular if you own more than one property. And if you're retired, even though you may have a reasonably substantial income, how much of that you want to have chewed up by running costs. And of course, in many cases, unless you continue to spend capital on the improvement and maintenance of the property, you may find yourself, as many have, in a large property, living in what is effectively a depreciating asset. Many assets in continental Europe have downvalued over the last 10 or 15 years. Obviously, the larger the property, the more leverage you have got in terms of borrowing. But frankly, you know, do you really want to borrow in your retirement, or are you trying to avoid borrowings? Interest rates are low right now. Will they stay there forever? That's a crystal ball that's rather hazy. So I think this is one of those areas where size does matter, if you'll excuse the expression. And the truth is that for many people, they find themselves... I can think of one example of one of the clients of Levins Franks who has decided to relocate to a smaller, more manageable property. He and his wife were rattling around in it like peas in a can. And frankly, the costs and expenses of running it were just denying them, if you like, the income that would give them a much better quality of life than they were otherwise enjoying. So it's something you really do have to think through when you get to the point of realising that when you bought the property, you were perhaps in good health. You were able to jog up the stairs. It may be now 15, 20 years later, jogging up the stairs is someone else's job. So, yep, it's a difficult one. Obviously, one gets attached to one's home, an Englishman's home, as you say, and a Welshman's, and a Scotsman's, and an Irishman's home is his castle. But do you really want to live in a castle for the rest of your days, or live in comfort and perhaps have the opportunity to use the capital to enhance your income?
Is this what people mean when they talk about being asset rich, cash poor?
That is exactly it. Within the financial services, wealth management industry, we often use that expression. It's not meant to be derogatory, but many people who start off their life as an expatriate in a property which at that point in time was a major purchase and still remains a major asset of theirs, over time with inflation, perhaps for some people not such good investment returns, and the increasing cost of maintenance and other costs and charges on the property, you end up being asset rich, like you own your castle, but frankly you aren't enjoying the ability to spend the capital on producing an income that castle represents, whereas if you downsize, of course you have the opportunity of purchasing something much more suitable for you as you get older, and also at the same time of then utilizing the excess capital for to produce an income for your benefit.
One option is presumably to borrow against the value of the house to release cash. So what do people need to bear in mind if they consider that route?
Yeah, I mean, downsizing from a large home into something more manageable, it has this kind of psychological perception that you're going to be living in some sort of bungalow somewhere, but that just isn't the case. I mean, many people downsize from an enormous 5-6-bedroom house into a 3-bedroom luxury apartment, which may or may not mean that it releases some capital, but it is more manageable. Very often it will release some capital. So, downsizing your property can help you to maintain, if you like, your existing lifestyle, while at the same time increasing your accessible wealth. It needn't really be a compromise for space. It's not about moving down market. It's about downsizing the property in which you live. And, to be fair, if you want to think about this. It's about thinking forward for the next 10 or 15 years and asking yourself, will this property continue to be suitable for me in 10 or 15 years' time? And in many, many cases, the answer that I'm afraid objectively is probably not.
Well, Bill, staying on subject, you've mentioned downsaving a lot, but can you explain what the implications are for retired expatriates?
Yeah, I mean, for most retired individuals who own a large property and have owned it for a long time, the tax consequences of a sale are not unduly onerous. There is, as I said a moment ago, the perception in many people's minds that whilst an Englishman's home, every other nationality in the UK, but an Englishman's home is his castle. If that is how you feel and you are concerned about imaging yourself because of this large property at the expense of not having what that capital might otherwise do to enhance your quality of life as you get older, it doesn't seem to me to make a practical sense in terms of the management of your wealth. The implications that you're moving to a less desirable property, as I've already explained, just isn't true anymore. I mean, I have another client at the moment who lives in a very large five-bedroomed house. They have now decided to move to a beautiful apartment overlooking the water. Is there less space? Yes, I suppose there is some less space, but honestly, it is a much better proposition for them in their late 70s than trying to continue to manage an excessively sized property. And as I say, as you get older, as I get older, I require personally more maintenance, that's for sure. But it's also true of properties. They are almost a living thing. And the deterioration of the vast majority of continental European properties, especially on the coastlines of Spain, tend to deteriorate faster than the red bricks and mortar that you would find generally in the UK. I'm generalising a bit here. So you're going to have increasing maintenance costs. And you have to remember that whatever you're capable of doing now, you have to consider what your health will be like in 5, 10 or 50 years' time and kind of plan for that in advance. What you don't want is to be ambushed by the bad health and then find that you've got to go out and try and downsize to a more suitable property, because as we all know, selling property, even in the current market, is not a fast operation. It often takes 2 or 3 years to get the property out of the way, and if you're stuffed at that time because you no longer can manage the stairs or climb down the stairs or do the gardening, and frankly, you probably left it too late.
Yeah. What alternative assets could help generate tax-efficient income in retirement?
Well, the one thing that will happen, if you, for example, and this is rather extreme, purchased an apartment and you had several hundred thousand of excess capital arising from the sale of your larger home, of course, what you can then do is you can use that magic word diversification to make sure that you aren't embedded in one asset class. People tend to think that property is golden, and of course it is wonderful in the sense that you make your investment and the dividends you get is that you live in it and enjoy the pleasure of your home. But of course, you are stuck in one asset. You're not terribly well diversified. The asset-rich, cash-poor equation you mentioned earlier is often also the case that you are embedded in one asset class, real estate, and beyond your control, the price moves down or up or sideways, and you have no control of it. The excess funds that come out of downsizing can be invested in a diversified portfolio of real estate funds, of property funds, and of equities, and of bonds, and can be used to produce not just capital growth that in many cases has exceeded and outperformed property price increases in continental Europe, but also which ends up producing a tax-efficient, provided you structure it correctly, a tax-efficient level of additional income as you get older. Because as you get older, people tend to feel that, well, maybe my costs and expenses will reduce, but have you looked at hospital charges and insurance and all the rest of those things that, as you get older, don't get cheaper, they get much more expensive.
And how could someone create a portfolio of such assets to generate an income?
I think it's a question of sitting down and talking to someone who understands how, of where you are, what you're trying to achieve, and the time scale over which you wish to achieve it, and the level of investment diversification that you wish to employ. Now, clearly, the greater the diversification, you are suppressing the risk. What you then need to do is to make sure that when you've got an above average return from your portfolio, you're keeping most of the money. So the structure in which you hold that excess capital in a portfolio is important too. But I would probably suggest that most people coming out of larger properties are using excess capital. I suspect that they would probably end up with a very well-diversified portfolio of real assets. You know, people think of a property as being a real asset because they can touch it, feel it. The problem is you can't eat a brick, you can't spend it. Whereas if you invest in real assets like equities, for example, if you invest your money in shares issued by the Apple Corporation, for example, you're buying a part of a business. That's a real asset just as much as a property. And the difference is there may be more opportunities for capital growth and income in a carefully selected portfolio of bonds, equities, and a mixture of cash than simply holding property itself.
What are the tax implications here in Spain and in the UK for selling property?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. I mean, the tax implications are often fairly complex. I mean, downsizing can reduce your tax liability because obviously property taxes are, generally speaking, quite high. I mean, wherever your home is, stamp duty and capital gains tax, they generally increase with the property's price tag, and the higher value homes can tip you over the threshold, for example, for wealth tax, and indeed, in particular in the UK, but in many parts of Spain, the increase in value has also meant an uncontrollable, that is to say, the individual can't control it, an uncontrollable increase in the level of inheritance or succession taxes that you're going to end up paying. I mean, in Spain, individuals normally attract wealth taxes of between 0.2 and 3.5% if the combined value of your Spanish property and other assets exceeds 700,000. Now, although Spanish residents do get a 300,000 main home allowance, worldwide assets, including UK property, still need to be counted towards your total tax liability. Now, wealth tax rates seem relatively low, but when you apply those relatively low percentage rates to a high value property, you are looking at a much inflated tax liability than might otherwise be the case if you were living in something which you have exchanged your large home for and used some of that capital to produce you with, as I say, access to capital and income. Because one of the key things about property is you simply can't divide it easily enough for inheritance purposes. Whereas if you convert the value of the property into liquid assets, cash, government bonds, equities, they are divisible very simply by transferring the proportions to those of your beneficiaries that you want to inherit them, whereas that is very difficult. And too often in my lifetime in talking to clients, the gift of, at the end of your life, of a property to a group of children often leads to much more difficulties than you would wish to have, simply because often, for a whole variety of different reasons, the children all have different wishes about what they might like to do with the property. One wants to keep it, one wants to sell it, one wants to live in it for a while. And you can see the problem. Whereas if you have converted the value of that property to cash, of course, what you give your children is an absolute gift for each of them to use as they wish.
So in summary, Bill, what are the key things people need to weigh up in terms of whether to downsize their property or not?
Oh, I think the overriding factor is to think ahead, is just to contemplate where you are now and look at your surroundings and ask yourself a very key question. Will this property, if my health declines, still be suitable for me? The second question is how you wish to enjoy the value of your wealth that you've created over many years. And if it is to sustain or improve your income, to get the best out of the last years of your life with travel, perhaps gifts to other people, whatever it is, then downsizing tends to make sense. I mean, you need to think about simple things, you know, the stairs, the garden, the maintenance. The saleability of large properties now is more difficult, in my opinion, than it was 15 or 20 years ago. And then, of course, you have to think, as I've just mentioned, about how you're going to pass on one solid bricks and mortar, if I can call it that, asset to your family and avoid the conflicts that often arise because each of them would like to do something different with their inheritance. It's a challenging proposition, and downsizing is a very sensible thought process to go through. Even if you decide to stay where you are, you won't have done yourself any harm thinking about it.
Yeah, doesn't but do for bad, does it, to have a ponder on things occasionally. Bill, the website is the great place for people to get in touch with you and find out their local agent as well.
Sure. I mean, if you go to the Blevins Franks website at www.blevinsfranks.com, you'll find a whole array of information. It's a great way to introduce yourself to the business, to familiarise yourself with the skills, talents and expertise that the business has at your disposal. Initial meetings with the partners and senior partners in local offices to you are complimentary, generally speaking, but you would certainly never be requested to pay a fee until it has been agreed with you. So it doesn't do any harm to have that conversation to find out if there is anything in that conversation that might be of benefit to you financially now or in the longer term.
Many thanks, Bill. We'll chat again at the same time next week.
Great pleasure, Howard. Have a good week.